Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavatam Canto 1, Chapter 10, The Departure of Lord Krishna for Dwarka, text number 34 and 35.
Yes. Pancharan,
part of the province Punjab.
Part of the province Punjab.
Oh, actually, it says Punjab. Is that different to Punjab? Or is it the same thing?
I think it says the same thing.
Punjab. P A with a long one. Punjab. Which is different to Punjab. Punjab. Okay. Surasenam.
Surasenam.
Part of the province of Uttar Pradesh.
Part of the province of Uttar Pradesh.
Sa.
Sa.
With.
With.
Jamunan.
Jamunan.
The districts on the bank of the Jamuna.
The districts on the bank of the Jamuna.
Mahabhartam.
Mahabhartam.
Part of northern Uttar Pradesh.
Part of northern Uttar Pradesh.
Kurukshetram.
Kurukshetram.
The place.
The place.
Where the battle was fought.
Matsyan.
The province Matsya.
The province Matsya.
Actually, Matsya.
Matsya.
Sarasvatam.
Sarasvatam.
Part of Punjab.
Part of Punjab.
So, there's a difference between Punjab and Punjab. No, there is. It's definitely spelled here. There's Punjab and Punjab. So there's two. Is that right? Where's Punjab?
There's nothing like Punjab.
Huh?
There's nothing like Punjab.
There's nothing like Punjab. Say the Punjabis. There's nothing like Punjab. But it's interesting. It says here, Panchalan, right? Kuru Jangala, Panchalan. And Panchalan is part of the province Punjab. And then further down, it says here, Sarasvatan, part of Punjab. So there's a difference between the two, whatever that may be. Ata. And so on.
And so on.
Maru.
Maru.
Rajasthan.
Rajasthan.
The land of deserts.
The land of deserts.
Dhanvam.
Dhanvam.
Oh, yeah, Dhanvam. Madhya Pradesh.
Madhya Pradesh.
Where water is very scanty. Atikramya.
Atikramya.
After passing.
After passing.
Solvira.
Solvira.
Saurashtra.
Saurashtra.
Abhirayo.
Abhirayo.
Part of Gujarat.
Part of Gujarat.
Paran.
Paran.
Western side.
Western side.
Anartan.
Anartan.
The province of Dwarka.
The province of Dwarka.
Bhargava.
Bhargava.
Oshanak.
Oshanak.
Upagat.
Upagat.
Overtaken by.
Overtaken by.
Shranta.
Shranta.
Fatigue.
Fatigue.
Vaha.
Vaha.
The horses.
The horses.
Manak vibhu.
Manak vibhu.
Slightly.
Slightly.
Because of the long journey.
Because of the long journey.
Interesting. Oshanak. The Lord then proceeded towards Kuru Jangala. Panchala, Surasena, the land on the bank of the river Jamuna, Brahmavarta, Kurukshetra, Matsya, Sarasvata, the province of the desert and the land of scanty water. After crossing these provinces, he gradually reached the Solvira and Avira provinces, then west of these reached Dwarka at last. And no mention of the horses being thirsty in the translation, although it's in the word for word. Purport. The provinces passed over by the Lord in those days were differently named, but the direction given is sufficient to indicate that he travelled through Delhi, Punjab, Rajasthan, Madhya Pradesh, Saurashtra, and Gujarat, and at last reach his home province at Dwarka. We do not gain any profit simply by researching the analogous provinces of those days up to now. But, it appears that the desert of Rajasthan and the provinces of scanty water, like Madhya Pradesh, were present even 5,000 years ago. The theory of soil experts that the desert developed in recent years is not supported by the statements of Bhagavatam. We may leave the matter for expert geologists to research, because the changing universe has different phases of geological development. We are satisfied that the Lord has now reached his own province, Dwarka Dham, from the Kuru provinces. Kurukshetra continues to exist since the Vedic age, and it is sheer foolishness when interpreters ignore or deny the existence of Kurukshetra. So I'm going to finish this chapter with the last verse and purport. Since this verse and purport sort of storyline, with a little comment by Srila Prabhupada about how we accept the Vedic version, we accept the Bhagavat version, not the geologist's version. Text 36, tatra tatra ha tatra tyaya hari prayu yataranaha sayam veje tisham paschad gavisho gambhastita. On his journey through these provinces, he was welcomed, worshipped, and given various presentations. In the evening, in all places, the Lord suspended his journey to perform evening rites. This was regularly observed after sunset. It is said here that the Lord observed the religious principles regularly while he was on the journey. There are certain philosophical speculations that even the Lord is under the obligations of fruitive action. But actually this is not the case. He does not depend on the action of any good or bad work. And this is in italics. Since the Lord is absolute, everything done by him is good for everyone. That's the end of the italics. But when he descends on earth, he acts for the protection of the devotees and for the annihilation of the impious non-devotees. Although he has no obligatory duty, still he does everything so that others may follow. What does obligatory mean? Obligatory. Huh? Obliged. But what's obliged mean?
By law.
Duty bound. Yeah, that's a good synonym. Duty bound. Obliged means you must do it. Right? That is the way of factual teaching. So, although he has no obligatory duty, he's not bound, he's not obliged to do anything, still He does everything so that others may follow. There's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't there? Yad yad acharati sveshtas tat tat ivetaro janaha sayat mana. Yes, four people speaking at once and I can't hear any of them. Sayat pramanam kurute lokas tat anuvartate. Is that right? Something like that, yeah. Yad yad acharati sveshtas. Whatever the standards are set by the great men, then the common men will follow. And there's another reference, I think, in the chapter. Isn't it how, you know, Krishna says, if I abandon appropriate or proper works, in other words, the common duties of man, of men, then people will follow my example and everybody will go to hell. So Prabhupada says, that is the way of factual teaching. Acharya means one who teaches by example. Acharya means one who teaches by example. So that's what Krishna is doing. He's teaching by example. One must act properly himself and teach the same to others. Otherwise, no one will accept one's blind teaching. He is himself the awarder of fruitive results. He is self-sufficient, and yet he acts according to the rulings of the revealed scripture in order to teach us the process. If he does not do so, the common man may go wrong. But in the advanced stage, when one can understand the transcendental nature of the Lord, one does not try to imitate him. That is not possible. You know, sometimes if people, we don't seem to see them that often these days, but certainly in the 60s and the 70s when Prabhupada was preaching, then people would often say, you know, I am God. I am God. There's one occasion, I'm reading the book written by Ranjal Prime, called When the Sun Shines, which is about Srila Prabhupada's preaching in Britain. And in Glasgow, Prabhupada gave a lecture and he asked for questions and one man stood up at the back and started raving on and raving on, and Prabhupada called him closer as if to hear him, and the man kept talking and talking, and eventually he said, I am God. And then he spoke for some time. Prabhupada said, have you finished? And he finished. He said, you are not God. You are a dog. And everybody was stunned. And so was the man who was talking. And he just retreated back to his seat. And then after a couple of minutes, one person started clapping. And then another person started clapping. And eventually the whole auditorium, everybody was clapping. You are not God. You are a dog. So anyway, we can say to people, if you think that you're God, okay, try lifting up Govardhan Hill with your left pinky. Show us. Demonstrate. Show us how you are God. You are not God, you are dog. So Prabhupada says here, in the advanced stage, so we follow Krishna. We follow Krishna, but we don't imitate Krishna. We know the bounds of following. Following means understanding the purpose, understanding the principle, and then applying the principles appropriately and properly according to our station and situation in life. One does not try to imitate him. This is not possible. The Lord, in human society, does what is the duty of everyone. But sometimes he does something extraordinary and not to be imitated by the living being. His acts of evening prayer, as stated herein, must be followed by the living being. But it is not possible to follow his mountain lifting. I didn't realize this, but anyway. At least I'm sticking with the parampara, although jumping the gun. His mountain lifting or dancing with the gopis cannot be imitated. One cannot imitate the sun, which can exhaust the water even from a filthy place. The most powerful can do something which is all good, but our imitation of such acts will put us into endless difficulty. Endless difficulty. Therefore, in all actions, the experienced guide, the spiritual master, excuse me, who is, did you? Therefore, in all actions, the experienced guide, the spiritual master, who is the manifested mercy of the Lord, should always be consulted, and the path of progress will be assured. Thus, in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the first canto, 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Departure of Lord Krishna from Dwarka. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunitam Jena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stavitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadam Vinsasatantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pankam Pankayate Girim Yakripatamaham Mande Sri Gurunavina Chavinam. So today we are celebrating Krishna's birthday. Not that Krishna has a birthday, because we know that Krishna is not born. Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, Janma Kama Chame Divyam Yo Mam Veti Tat Vataha Chatva Deham Puna Janma Nayeti Mam Ti So Duna. Is that right? Actually, sometimes Prabhupada quotes this verse and he mentions it differently. In the text that I was just reading, Nayeti Mam Kunteya. But it's the same thing. Arjuna Kunteya, same personality. So Janma Karma. If one can understand the nature of Krishna's activities, it's like here we see his activities traveling from Hastinapur to Dwarka, and there's a description of the places that he visits and what he does, stops in the evening and has the aarti. Actually, Prabhupada set up ISKCON like that. We have our duties, right? Mangalarti, rise early in the morning and see the worship of the Lord. That's the beginning. So I mentioned this many times. The ISKCON sandwich, right? Begins with morning bhajan and evening bhajan. So we see in the description of Krishna's activities that he's performing, he's doing the same things. Doing the same activities as ordinary persons, apparently ordinary persons. Of course, if an ordinary person follows the example of Krishna, then he doesn't become an ordinary person anymore. But he becomes a transcendentalist. All of these activities are designed in such a way so that one ultimately comes to the point of knowing Krishna, right? That's mentioned by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Vedais chaya savayaham eva vedyo vidanta krit veda vid eva. Vedanta krit veda vid eva chaham. The purpose of studying the Vedanta and studying the Vedas is ultimately to come to a proper understanding of Krishna. The purpose of all rituals and devotional practices, worship, is ultimately meant to bring us to the point of understanding Krishna. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, if we can understand the transcendental nature of Krishna's birth and activities, then we can stop the cycle of repeated birth and death and not have to take birth again in the material world, but go back to Krishna in the spiritual realm where Krishna lives eternally. So in that sense we can understand Krishna has his eternal abode. In that place, Prabhupada says, birth, death, old age and disease are conspicuous by their absence. There is no birth, death, old age and disease in Krishna's abode, in the transcendental realm. But we celebrate Krishna's birthday because Krishna appears, not that he's born, but he appears much like the sun rises in the morning. You know, when the sun sets, that doesn't mean the sun ceases to exist. It just means that we're not able to see the sun within our vision. Because, you know, on the other side, in London, I think London, is pretty much exactly the opposite. It's midday here, it's midnight there. Midnight, completely dark here. Midday, they can see the sun there. So we know the sun is always in existence, so certainly also Krishna is in existence. But we celebrate and worship, glorify, perform our devotional service, especially with intensity on this day, because it commemorates the day that Krishna appeared, like the sun appears, and manifest his transcendental, his jhamma and karma. Because that karma has to be understood properly. It's divyam, it's transcendental. It's not material. There are no reactions for Krishna's karma. His karma is divya, unlike ours, which produces results, reactions. If we follow Krishna's example and perform the divya karma, then we also become transcendental. This is the process of devotional service. So what are those activities? Well, his appearance is a transcendental activity. He is unborn, but at the same time, he takes birth. That requires some meditation and contemplation to understand how he is able to take birth, but at the same time is unborn. What else does Krishna do? Patram pushpam tulam tvayam yo me bhaktya prayachati. Krishna eats. Krishna eats, especially on Janmashtami in Melbourne. Actually, all over. Krishna eats. Chintrupa said this morning's Mangalati milk sweet and other sweet offering was very big this year. But somebody might say, how is Krishna eating? Krishna is not eating. When you look at the offering plate before it's offered, it has a certain quantity of sweets on it. Then after the offering, the plate has the same amount of sweets on it. So how is Krishna eating? Krishna is a transcendental eater. He can eat using the all of the limbs of his body. What is it? Angani, yasya, sakalendri, avritti, manti, pasyanti, panti. What is it? Chiram, jaganti. So all of the limbs can perform all of the functions of all of the other limbs. So Krishna eats. But when Krishna eats, he eats with his eyes. And he also accepts the offering by hearing the sound of the mantras being chanted by the person who's performing the offering. And Krishna is satisfied by that offering. His hunger is satisfied. So when we meditate on Krishna, we understand that he's not an ordinary person. He's an extraordinary person who performs activities in extraordinary ways. You know, one of the things that I recall from this book, Prabhupada makes the comment that all living entities manifest in one way or another the mystic potencies of Krishna. All of the living entities manifest in some way, some small part. And then Prabhupada says, look at the trees. Just as Krishna can eat with all of his various limbs, the tree is eating with his feet. Or he's got his head in the ground. But usually Prabhupada says, you know, the foot of the tree and the roots. When I read that, I thought, wow, that's a really amazing way of looking at things. You know, how deep Prabhupada's vision was to see Krishna's opulence in the tree eating with his feet, and Krishna accepting offerings and accepting them simply by seeing. So Krishna is extraordinary personality. He's the supreme personality of Godhead. Achincha Rupa, which means inconceivable form, inconceivable activities. They're transcendental. What's another activity of the Lord which is unique? As Gaudiya Dakshaya Vishnu, he lies down in the waters of the Gavadak Ocean. It's not the causal ocean. What is it called? It's the water that lies at the bottom of the universe, right? And then his consort Lakshmi sits at his feet, ready to serve him. But he manifests the universe and the firstborn living entity without any assistance. And so from his navel grows a lotus, and then from that lotus called Brahma is born. Now what's that? What do we describe that as? What do we think of that as? What do you think of it as? When you hear that story, what do you think? I was going to say. Yes, he's self-sufficient, not dependent on anybody.
Yeah.
What else do we think about that story?
Be hard to fathom.
Yes, it's far out. We would say in hippie lingo, far out, man. Far out. Almost, you know, incredulous, hard to believe. When I first heard that, I thought, whoa, wee. These Hare Krishnas are pretty weird. They believe this stuff. But this is the meaning of transcendental, of extraordinary, of beyond the material. Not mundane, the source of everything, the maintainer of everyone, and ultimately he destroys it all. It's all eventually wound up, drawn back into the body of Mahavishnu. Amazing. So not an ordinary person. This is God. And God can do anything. And there are many other stories. But we need to know these various aspects. We need to understand the nature of Krishna's janma, his birth, and the nature of his karma, his activities, and how he's the superlative person, that he's beyond the material creation, that he's the support of the material creation, he's the source of the material creation, that he's ultimately the annihilator, you know, in the cycle of universal affairs. So how does one understand and know Krishna as the transcendental personality, the supreme personality of Godhead? How do we know that? And know that in a way that's Ratnavali. She's not getting her own way. How do we understand Krishna's divyam, divya karma, divya janma? How do we come to that point of understanding? We have to come to that point of understanding by the performance of devotional service. Deep understanding, not just some superficial understanding, just like when I was reading that section of this biography of Prabhupada, basically, the history, and where Prabhupada says, you know, the trees are eating with their feet. And I realized Prabhupada's vision of the creation is very, very deep. Very, very deep. Because we tend to see things from the superficial... Well, I don't know. I won't say we. I'll say I tend to see things from a very superficial point of view. But if we're to be successful in the performance of our devotional service, then we have to see things beyond the superficial. We have to see everything from a very deep and transcendental level, so that we can be qualified to then enter into the transcendental realm. One doesn't get entrance into the spiritual world by a superficial understanding of these things, or just a factual understanding. But the realization has to come through divya jnana, transcendental knowledge. And transcendental knowledge is acquired through the performance of devotional service. And, you know, specifically, pure devotional service bestows upon us the purest of knowledge and the purest of understanding. And, you know, we may not be expert at it, that's okay. But at least we should be very, very serious about our application and our determination to follow the process. Otherwise, our understanding of Krishna will be simply superficial. That's why, you know, just worshipping Krishna on his birthday is not enough, because in India, you know, today is a public holiday, isn't it? Huh? Like Christmas Day. Isn't it? In Australia, Christmas Day is celebrated by everybody. Because most people on Christmas Day, what do? Sleep in.
Oh, it's a holiday, beauty.
Holiday means I don't have to go to work. But for the devotees, it means something else. Okay, today is a holy day, but now I do extra for Krishna. I do more for Krishna. I increase my chanting, I decrease my sleeping, decrease eating, right? Unfortunately. Because we also know that Prabhupada said, you know, ours is a kitchen religion. The nectar for which we're always anxious, especially after the morning program, breakfast time. But today, no breakfast. For more hearing and chanting, and for more service. No, we cut down our sleeping. Right? Try to sleep less. Although, interesting, you know, when Prabhupada was in England in the later 70s, the devotees used to go to various Indian families' houses, and they'd be keen to attend because they'd go with Prabhupada and there'd always be a big feast. And that was popular because the temple didn't have very much money. So the prasada wasn't very good. And on one occasion, the devotees had gone... interesting, this detail. The devotees went to this life member's house for a meal, and they were eating the prasada, and everybody was enjoying it. Prabhupada was picking the onion out and putting it aside. Can you imagine that? Like, if we saw something with onion, we'd be like, but anyway, Prajumna was holding everybody up. They were getting ready to go. Prajumna was holding everybody up. Prabhupada said, you know, where's Prajumna? Prajumna was in the kitchen making a sash. And, you know, Prabhupada said, why are you holding us up? And he said, well, I can't eat now because Prabhupada was very strict on this point. If I eat now, then I won't be able to wake up for Mangal Aarti. So I'll keep the prasadam until tomorrow and then I'll have the feast tomorrow. And Prabhupada said, no, you should eat when you're hungry and sleep when you're tired. Interesting. So anyway, maybe on Janmashtami, I know at a certain point in the day I usually fade. And does that happen to you? Huh? So, you know, maybe on occasion we require a little snap just to recharge the battery. Especially if we haven't eaten. But we try to decrease. Right? Try to decrease. Certainly we fast all day. Unless you're old and, you know, run out of energy, then maybe you can have something to eat. Even Prabhupada would, you know, because he was an elderly gentleman, sometimes in the evening he would have some fruit or something to keep going. Sometimes it happens, your sugar level goes to such a rock bottom low that you just can't do anything. So you have to be practical. But usually we minimize these things. Eating, sleeping, reduce. Why? Because it's Krishna's birthday, we want to increase our devotional activities. But of course, you know, not that we just celebrate Krishna's birthday one day in the year and then we forget about it, because we're still performing devotional service on all the other days of the year. But why on Janmashtami we increase? Because it has a special potency. It has special shakti. So So if we increase on that day, that power or that potency that comes from that day is transferred into the activities that we do throughout all of the other days of the year. So, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, you know, the days of devotion, like Ekadasi, or, you know, Janmashtami, and the other appearance days of even the Acharyas, like tomorrow is Prabhupada's appearance day, these days have great power and potency to infuse our devotional service with this was became a very big hit, that tune. Mundane though. Phones in flight mode, please, or at least silent. Then we engage in those activities on a regular basis. Satatam kirtayanto mam. Krishna says, what is it? Satatam kirtayanto mam. Dridabrataha. Yatantascha dridabrataha. That's it, yes, thank you. Yatantascha dridabrataha. So it's not that, you know, we worship Krishna on his birthday. And that then enthuses and infuses our regular devotional service with potency. It helps us to crack through that superficiality by performing austerities, extra austerities, and extra service, extra dedication, you know, especially service through the via medium of the spiritual masters, Prabhupada mentions here in this book. Serving the mission of the spiritual master. On the days like Janmashtami, you know, generally speaking, we don't go out and preach. Generally speaking, but we, of course, we are preaching. But we use these days as a means for building up our spiritual strength. So we stay in the association of the devotees, and our devotional activities are very much focused on hearing and chanting and serving the deity. You know, very much pure, focused sadhana. In order to get that spiritual boost or that spiritual strength, in order to purify our devotional service, so that we can make progress and move from being superficial devotee to a deep, or shall we say deeper, may take lifetimes to become a deep devotee. But still we can practice. And of course that proper understanding of Krishna and Krishna's divya karma and divya janma begins with hearing. All of our devotional service actually begins with hearing. Or, well, actually, what is it? Jivado mentioned by Rupa Goswami. Actually, devotional service begins with the tongue. So our hearing means somebody else is speaking. So at the beginning of the nine items, the most important is hearing. That's the means by which we begin our devotional service, and it's the means by which we progress our devotional service. It's the means by which we can come to this point of understanding. Yoga Menti Tapataha. One who knows me in truth. Deep understanding of Krishna's position as transcendental, That's the qualification by which one is then able to Chaktavar Deham Puna Janma. Na Iti. One doesn't take birth again when one understands Krishna in truth, without superficiality but deeply. That deeper understanding of Krishna and devotional service is arrived at by one who's very sincere, and one who follows the process of devotional service not just on Janmashtami but satatam, constantly. Tesham satata yuktanam bhaktatam pritipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam jena nama payanti te. Thank you. So I give them the understanding by which they come to me. Who? Those who constantly engage in devotional service. So on Janmashtami we have this opportunity to meditate on Krishna's Janma and Karma and his unique pastimes and activities, and to throw ourselves into devotional service in order to deepen our appreciation and love and affection and understanding of Krishna. So I might finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions? I have a question. Anybody here who doesn't have any service to do? Everybody's got service too. Okay, well, I won't hold you up then. Pancharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki
Jai,
Srila Prabhupada
Ki Jai.
One thing you could do. Here we go, here's an extra service, just to deepen your devotional service. Hands up, who's written an offering for Srila Prabhupada? Okay, radio. Now you have an extra service to do today. Write an offering for Srila Prabhupada to be read to him tomorrow morning. It's the duty of a disciple to honour the Guru on his Vyasa Puja. So we should all write something or say something, but generally better that in order to say something concise and to the point, you write it first, and we can offer these offerings to Srila Prabhupada tomorrow. Does that make sense? Anybody who doesn't understand that? Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Krishna Janmashtami Mahotsava ki jai, Gaura Bhaktavinda ki jai.